Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. And right now we're up to episode 23 of season 7, getting close to the end here. It's called Emergence, directed by Cliff Bohl. Teleplay goes to Joe Manosky. Story credit goes to Brandon Braga. Aired back on May 22nd, 1994. In this episode, the Enterprise becomes an emergent intelligence as it starts developing its own intelligence and starts to run amok on the holodeck, of course, and the crew has to figure out what this intelligence is after. Clay is here to talk about this one. But before we get to the episode, I just wanted to mention the giveaway that we're doing. We're just about to wrap up TNG, obviously, as I mentioned, and we're doing a giveaway for the longtime listeners and patrons on Patreon. We're giving away the Blu-rays for the TNG series, so seasons 1 to 7. You get all the Blu-rays. You get every single episode on Blu-ray in that high-definition remaster that looks so, so nice. We're also giving away on Blu-ray as well the TOS movies 1 to 6 and TNG 1 to 4 movies. So you get 10 movies. Spectacular. I know these things are on Netflix, but it's nice to have your own copy. It's nice to have a Blu-ray copy. It looks a little bit better. You know, it doesn't have the Netflix petering out every once in a while when your broadband goes a little bit wonky and all that stuff. That's the giveaway, giving away those things. The way it works is that it's kind of a raffle ticket that favors patrons on Patreon. So the way it works is you're going to get raffle tickets, and I'll put them onto a spreadsheet, and then I'll randomly draw one of the tickets, and that'll be the first prize, and then the second will be the second. The way you get the tickets, patrons on Patreon get a ticket depending on what their monthly donation is. So if you're a $2 patron, you get two tickets. If you're a $3, you get three. If you're five, you get five, et cetera, et cetera. So those people automatically get their tickets. The other way to send one in, if you're not a patron, is to email thepenskefilevideo@gmail.com, thepenskefilevideo@gmail.com. Put something like TNG giveaway in the subject, and I will add your email and or name to the list, and you will be one of the raffle tickets on the list. So that's the way to do it. Either be a patron on Patreon and you get a bunch of tickets, or you can just email me and you get one ticket. You all go onto the list. I'm going to use random.org to pick a winner and a second winner for both of those things. We'll give away the movies first and then the TNG series second. We'll be doing that on the Q&A and suggestion video that'll go up after we air the All Good Things episode. So you have a little bit of time, a week or two, maybe 2 weeks at most. Get those emails in. Become a patron if you feel so generous. That'll be helpful going forward into DS9. You get a chance to win what I consider to be some pretty cool stuff, which is all the episodes on DVD. As long as you have a Blu-ray player, you will never be unable to watch them. You know how they go off on and off of Netflix. Plus, it's all going to CBS All Access, right? Because they have their own thing now, so why would they need Netflix? And you're probably not going to subscribe to that, so why don't you try to enter this contest to win these DVDs? Guys, thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate it. We've been doing this for a pretty long time at this point. We are wrapping up TNG. It's bittersweet, but it feels good at the same time. Anyway, me and Clay are going to talk about Emergence right after this.
The number of systems now being affected by the nodes has increased considerably. Sensors, engines, replicators, propulsion, they're all working together now, almost independently of the main computer. And the nodes link them all through the holodeck.
But why the holodeck? It doesn't make any sense.
Commander, I believe what happens on the holodeck has direct effect on the ship. When we attempted to destroy the nodes, the characters on the train responded almost immediately to stop us.
And when the engineer tried to protect us, one of the other characters shot him.
Then the conductor signaled for the train to change direction. And at approximately the same time,
the Enterprise also took off in a new direction.
Are you saying the ship is under the control of the holodeck?
Not precisely. Geordi, does the configuration of connection nodes look familiar to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it looks a little like the structure of your positronic brain.
That is correct. It would appear that the nodes are in the process of creating a rudimentary neural net.
Data, what are you suggesting?
Unlikely as it may sound, I believe the Enterprise may be forming an intelligence.
Clay, this is your last normal episode of TNG. You'll be back for All Good Things, but this is your last non-movie length episode. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts mm-hmm. about that briefly?
Actually, yes. This occurred to me as I was watching this. I don't think I've ever done a sentient holodeck episode. And I would like to thank you for saving it for this one, because this is one step better, where it's actually the whole ship is sentient, which I find is much more interesting anyway.
Is that actually true?
I think it is. Unless I am completely... I mean, it's been 7 seasons. I can't remember half the ones I did anyway.
I thought you were joking.
I don't think I've ever done a sentient holodeck episode.
Wow. Okay. Because
knowing my luck, the first one I did was probably a sentient holodeck episode.
Yeah, the first podcast you did, I think, was Angel One, actually.
Oh, yes. How could I forget?
My other lead-in for this episode would be, Clay, welcome to the show. I guess we had to end with a Holodeck Goes Crazy episode, mm-hmm. although that would have landed on deaf ears, because you would have been like, is this a theme? I don't understand.
I mean, I've just seen everybody else get to cover them, and I was always a little bit sad.
So... we have a Holodeck Goes Crazy episode, hot on the heels of Bloodlines, which finalized all of the family tree things. We clipped off all the branches on the family tree.
What's that
tree.
One about?
Check out the Badass Podcast on Twitter.
we're talking about Bane?
We were just going to talk about Maximum Carnage for a couple hours. It's 14.
I'll let you take the lead on that one, because I didn't read that story. But You know, I've always been a Marvel guy, but I know more about the DC crossovers, I think, than I do the Marvel ones, so...
Yeah. I was always a Marvel guy. Never really got into DC, and I don't really understand why. Don't really get it. But yeah, I guess we'll cover this episode before everyone starts tuning off and saying, what the fuck? Not again. So, the holodeck goes crazy, right? Mm-hmm. I actually think this is a good version of the holodeck goes crazy episode, which is not to say it's a good episode, mm-hmm. but this is a Joe Manosky script, and I think it is so of Joe Manosky's mind. I think that he had a... Joe Manosky also wrote... he did Darmok. He did Masks. He's done a few others. Joe Manosky scripts always seem to me like he had a wonderful, wonderful idea that didn't quite translate once it was put onto paper.
I can see that, yeah.
Darmok is kind of the exception. I think Darmok works on all levels, but Masks is kind of that way. I think this is kind of that way.
Which one is Masks?
Masks is, you didn't watch it. Tana and Sean did. It's the one where a life form starts turning the Enterprise into like a historical relic, and Data starts acting like different survivors of this ancient civilization.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So
how's the Wikipedia entry for that one?
Oh, it's very exciting. It's like it made me want to watch it over and over again.
I look forward to reading it with the soundtrack on in the background later.
But do you think that there was... What did you... what did you think of this episode before I sort of taint your view with what I thought of it?
I really liked the concept. Because, as I think I said a little bit in the last one of the things that I just naturally do... with a lot of the concepts they bring to the table in the show is, it seems like they're going one way, and then I start thinking about, it'd be really cool if this would be, that's a really interesting idea, blah, 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 that kind of thing. And this was one where, I can't remember if I thought this before they kind of laid it out, but I think it was when the ship changes course to avoid whatever in the first maybe like 10 minutes of the show.
Right.
I thought, oh man, it would be really cool if they, instead of having a sentient holodeck, it was a sentient ship. Because I started thinking about Data and how overpowered he is, and I started thinking about the holodeck, and they give you a pretty good example right away of how overpowered the holodeck is, and nobody really knows what the rules are there.
Right.
the fact that this might end up turning into a Westworld podcast as well, but the fact that they have a safety that you can turn off on the holodeck is kind of amazing.
Right, yeah.
Same goes with Westworld. Why is that even an option? I was thinking about it. I was like, it would be interesting if the ship technology moving forward starts to equal that, because you got to think that the ship has to be at least as powerful, if not more powerful, than Data.
Right.
So what's stopping the ship? I mean, because they've got this computer that's as fast, arguably, it's as fast as Data, because, you know, as I've harped on in the past, it keeps up with how fast he types.
Well, I mean, just for I don't think you did any of the Moriarty episodes, but
I did not.
The ship was asked to create a life form that could combat Data, and it did. It created a artificial life form, basically.
Yeah. So the ship is as powerful, if not more powerful, than Data. So what's stopping the ship from becoming sentient itself? And I thought that was a really interesting way to go.
I thought that I'm with you up until all the way through the point. This is where I start to think that the idea is more powerful than the execution. They have that scene in the conference room where they start comparing all the systems of the Enterprise to a living organism's systems.
Yep.
Like the replicator is kind of like the thing, and the engine is how it moves around, and like communication system is how it talks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, like what a wonderfully symbolic take of the ship, which has been basically a character for this entire seven seasons. Like the ship is the character that you know, but you don't really know. Oh, here's an episode where they make it a character. Did something change for you, or what were you thinking after that at that point?
Well, what the nugget that they drop in there that I really loved was when they were talking about that, and they basically referred to the holodeck as the ship's imagination. And
right.
I was like, oh, that's a really cool idea.
Yep.
And when they started talking about how, oh, this person represents the conductor represents the engineering section, I thought that was a really that. But I started thinking about what all the other people in the train stood for. Like, what does the gangster stand for?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't know why those personalities are fighting each other.
Yeah, or the woman who's just like drinking champagne.
Yep.
What is her? Well, yeah. But that concept, I loved that concept. I thought that was really cool. However, I feel like this one was kind of I thought the mystery was really good too, because I wasn't really sure how this was going to play out. I knew it had something to do with that thing that looked like you know those toys that the kids have. They have them in the doctor's office all the time for some reason.
Twisty straw just, type things.
Just a bunch of pipes with like little beads that you slide around.
Oh right, yeah, that thing. Yep, yep.
Obviously, it had something to do with that. But when they paid that off at the end, I was like, "Oh boy, that was bad." However, I thought that part was stupid because the problem with the holodeck, which is why they have to tell you that the safety is turned off, is because there's no stakes in the holodeck.
Right. Yep.
And this story didn't really have any stakes to it at all, except that they couldn't control their ship.
I think that the fact that there's this switch that happens somewhere in the episode, and I don't know if it's actually ever brought up, but it is a shift in what the script is about. Where the intelligence is no longer the ship, and it's some other thing that is using the ship.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that was a dumb decision.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. I think that's exactly what it was for me, is that the concept of the ship coming alive I found really interesting, but just having it be another thing controlling the ship didn't really fascinate me.
Right, and it looks terrible, and it flies off into space, and everyone's
happy. However, after that, the last bit of dialogue that Picard has, I thought was really good.
Oh, did you like that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because it was an interesting concept to me that I think his reasoning is kind of silly.
Yes, yeah, I think that's why I don't like it.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's something interesting to me about his explanation of how the ship is built off of everything that its builders and occupants have done and want to do, and under the assumption that what they have done and want to do is for good intentions, you would hope that therefore whatever is created from
those ingredients
is of itself does it in and of itself have good intentions. I thought that was a really fascinating way to look at it. But again, yeah, I don't think it makes a ton of sense or as far as like strategy goes.
Right. I think it's more of an appropriate thing to say at this point in the series than a logical argument for why you don't track it down and shoot it out of the sky.
Right. I think that's what it was for me. It was like, this is a really good point to kind of like put a pin in that and be like, this is sort of like a thesis statement for the writer.
Right.
I thought that was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's you know, I enjoy the idea of this emergent intelligence, and I like the idea that it's kind of growing like a child, and it's sort of figuring out what it's doing. And mm-hmm. I did like the fact that it jumped away from whatever they call it, a plasma flux or something, to save the ship and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Mm-hmm. I wasn't crazy about the mystery aspect as much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it felt kind of like a lot of the Minofsky and holodeck stuff does, where the aspects of the mystery don't tie together. They feel like they're just sort of wacky for the sake of being wacky,
mm-hmm.
like the mobster with the golden brick.
Yep, that stuff didn't really work.
Like I don't understand what that's supposed to be about or anything like that. It didn't really strike me. I don't know. I mean, is there anything you wanted to talk about? I'll have a hard time talking about this one, I think.
Well, I think the thing what struck me about the mystery aspect is it did kind of feel kind of Westworldy to me. Like until it turned out that the what were they trying to destroy? The Noid? The Domino's Pizza Noid? Is that what it was?
Yes.
As they kept calling it.
The Noid.
Until they figured out they had to destroy the Noid. It reminded me a lot of, you've watched Westworld, right?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No,
okay.
No.
I guess I can't really get into this at all, but the image of the Noid that kept popping up was one of those things where it felt kind of like David Lynchian to me, where it's like, this represents something.
Right.
It's, you know, they're putting a puzzle together, and the picture is this thing. And I enjoyed that, where they were trying to parse out what this thing was, why it was important, why the ship was so enamored by it. But I didn't like the resolution of it. I didn't think it's another
life form.
CGI creature that we can't really
talk to.
Like when they find it in the cargo bay there, when what does Geordi say? He says something to the effect of like, the transporters and something else
replicators.
Are now the replicators are now being fed into this thing. I was
right.
Like, oh shit, that's like the most two powerful things in all of the universe. What is this thing going to do? And the other thing that they didn't pay off the way I thought it would, but I thought was a really interesting idea, was when they were like, all right, it needs these particles from this star, and Picard's like, well, can we manufacture that? And I was like, oh my god, are they going to use the replicator to replicate a particle from a destroyed star?
And just shoot it, transport it into the Noid.
Yeah, I was like, that's kind of really interesting. I don't know. They've never pushed it that far. They only just want tea.
That's true. I mean, someone actually complained on, not complained, someone brought to my attention the technical understanding of the, I've always had the idea of, I don't understand why shipyards exist. Why don't they just build a giant replicator that replicates ships mm-hmm. for them? Apparently, there's a technical argument against it, but I think it sounds like horseshit. It's obviously made up, but it just sounds like horseshit in the first place.
Well, is it kind of like how they explain why the T-1000 can't turn himself into a giant gun
in
Terminator 2, where it's like he can only do solid-state things, nothing with moving parts?
I think the explanation was that the ship is too complicated. It can make food. But my argument is that the transporter and the replicator are virtually identical, and the transporter can create a human being perfectly.
Yeah.
And so how much more complicated can a ship be?
Here's a question. Could you use a giant teleporter so let's do it this way. You build one ship the old fashioned way. Could you then use a gigantic teleporter to bank a copy of a teleported ship and then just keep like running that off like a Xerox?
I would think so. That's second chances, right? That's what happened to Riker. He just another copy of his signal created him. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe they only have to build one. I don't know. Maybe the shipyard. You know those like cool space dock things that they're always flying into?
Yes.
Maybe that's a giant teleporter. That's just like a giant copy machine.
It should be. I don't know why they don't explore this. It seems like it's a huge, huge.
I am flaw. Still. I the one thing that I want the new Star Trek show to do. Especially because if they're actually doing an anthology thing where it's going to be different stuff every season or whatever.
Yep.
I desperately, desperately want them to explore the idea where if you send somebody down through the transporter and they get killed on a planet, you can grab their signal from before they went to the planet and recreate them.
Yeah, right.
Desperately want them to do that.
There's a murder mystery built into that. And, is somewhere along the lines. So what Discovery has done is actually increased my TOS episode watch list by one, because it seems likely that they're going in one direction now for their first story.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Which is interesting. This is all just speculation, but it seems pretty solid to me at this point.
Cool.
Let's see. Emergence.
Big Lebowski's in it.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I feel this is the best Holodeck Goes Crazy episode.
I got to do this one.
It's not a huge episode or anything, and I think it kind of falls apart the further on it goes into itself. But
yeah, I think so too.
How would you compare this to Bloodlines? I guess would be my, like, just because that's fresh in our minds. I feel this one still.
We better cover it now because I'm going to forget it as soon as we finish.
I feel Emergence still kind of suffers from a lack of direct story drive to it. In a way, like once the intelligence is revealed to be something else, it feels like what I was saying before about the holodeck just feels like a bunch of shit thrown together. It kind of feels like that just pushes you towards the end.
Yeah, I would agree. I think once they get into, I kind of like some of the stuff where they were starting and stopping the train based on like the movement of the train was mirroring what the ship was doing. I like that stuff. But yeah, once. Like, I didn't understand really the stuff with the city that they were going to, where, you know, once the star ran out of particles, it was no longer the city, and then they went to the next star, and it's like, oh, well, here's the new version of the city. That stuff was a little bit shaky for me. I kind of get what they were doing, but I don't think it really worked.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think once they kind of tell you what's going on, it kind of doesn't hang together as much. Because that way, once they tell you that it's an actual entity that is directing things, it takes away the interesting aspect of, oh, well, this ship is becoming alive and is learning how to be alive.
Right, and what does that mean for
them?
Yeah,
it now just turns into there's a pilot here who has something, a goal it's trying to achieve.
Right.
Like, how much more interesting would it have been if the ship was coming alive and it was doing all this stuff because there was some sort of imminent threat that they were headed for, that the ship is like, no, I can't let you do that.
Right.
But it doesn't have the verbiage as a new creature, even though I guess it can talk to them. But it doesn't have the verbiage as a new sentient creature to express that naturally in a way that makes sense on paper, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
That would be kind of cool.
I think it suffers the same. I think that this is suffering from the same kind of season 7 thing of the writers are sort of unwilling to examine what the central idea of the story is.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea of emergent intelligence and like sort of being accidentally created. It's kind of a Moriarty ripoff, but it's a little bit different because it's the ship, which feels more connected to the series at this point. Mm-hmm. It's the same with like Bloodlines and going back to Force of Nature and everything like that. It's like you're bringing up these ideas. You are not very interested in what this actually means, which is someone I was reading wrote, well, like seasons 1 to 2 of Trek would have tried to examine it, and they would have examined it badly.
Yes,
the mid-seasons would have got into it and how it sort of affected the characters, which I think is a general sort of summary of how the middle Trek seasons went.
Mm-hmm.
And the later seasons are just like, here's an idea. Let's just put a generic story on top of it.
That's a really good way to describe it, yeah. Yeah, because like, you know, like what if I feel like they could have kept the point that they were trying to make at the end if like, you know, let's say that the ship is actually legitimately coming alive, but kind of like remember the episode where Data shows how fucking powerful he is and just takes over everything and almost kills everyone by sucking out all the air and shit.
Oh right, yeah.
Like if they do something like that where the ship is malfunctioning and doing all this crazy shit, you can still have your weird, you know, Freudian train sequence. Because you're inside the imagination and the mind of the ship, so you're getting all this weird stuff that's helping you parse out X, Y, and Z. But what it's actually – they're approaching the ship as though it has gone crazy and is doing malicious stuff.
Right.
But then you find out that it is not doing that. It is actively trying to save them from something that will destroy them. So then you can still – you know, then at the end have, you know, like some coil bust and EMP thing. And somehow the intelligence gets wiped out because I guess you have to do that.
Right. They have to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you still have your point that you're making at the end where, you know, instead of it being a choice, it could have been a learning moment for Picard.
Right.
Where instead of his strategy being, oh, I'm just going to let it do what it's going to do, at the end he makes the point where maybe we should have thought that this thing, since it is the grand total of everything that's been put into it, maybe we should have given it the benefit of the doubt that its aims would be pure, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that one of the sort of just the sort of with the nature of sort of learning and technology and everything is like the artificial intelligence stories haven't really aged as well as they would nowadays. Like,
yeah,
Ex Machina, I think, is like a fantastic movie about sort of the problem with the, like, the Turing test and like the nature of like what would a human reaction be to a machine that's acting human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, there's interesting ways to take the story in terms of like the ship, you know, like one of the sort of modern threats about AI would just be like that. It would sort of be like how we regard ants, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe you feel bad and you don't want to step on one, so you kind of avoid it, but you don't think about them at all because they're so beneath you in terms of intelligence.
Right.
Like the ship, what if the ship was so alien that it actually didn't make sense what it wanted? And that was kind of the drive about it. Like you can't even understand what this thing is. Like I understand they have to get the story across, but the story comes across half-assed because it's all these Freudian links to things.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. if it was just so weird, I almost want the show to just go so weird that I don't really know what they're talking about, but it'd be like, wow, that is actually very alien and stuff like that, I guess would be.
Yeah, that'd be cool
too. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that stuff, that's the artificial intelligence stuff by nature, I think, is not going to age as well because
we're getting closer to the truth.
Yeah, and since it's a pop culture thing and is very of the moment, it's not really, you don't have time, they don't really have time to really project their thoughts forward. So what you end up getting is a very of the moment understanding of how that stuff works.
Right.
Or in of the moment fantasy version of how that stuff works, which is, you know, I mean, what you get in, if you watch like the first season of the X-Files, there's like two episodes that are about how, you know, a DOS, low-level DOS computer can come alive and start killing people and shit. But, you know, and I think it's interesting watching these holodeck ones because it's tough for me to shut my brain off on them anymore, where as a kid, I mean, I still love the holodeck. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
I think if it was real, it would be
the end of civilization.
Yeah, it would pretty much destroy society.
Yeah.
But that being said, though, it also would be a great thing to put on ships. Or if, like, space travel actually did get beyond the solar system, it's a great thing to put there because it is a fantastic way to get out of the ship.
Yeah.
However, what I can't stop thinking about now is, like, what the parameters are. Like, what's the boundaries of everything? The Westworld thing was coming up for me, too, because it's like, well, in a holodeck program, what can and can't the sentient creations do? So, like, for instance, when Crusher is talking to Picard about the Orient Express and about how this one time Gertrude Stein and Sigmund Freud
took a train together.
Just happened to be on the same car and they had dinner every night. And he's like, oh, I wish I could have heard what they were talking about. And she says, well, go on the holodeck and find out.
Right.
You wouldn't – like that would be complete – you can't do that, right? Because the only way to know that is to know what those two people were thinking. But to put them in a holodeck construction, they would be artificial versions of those people, which are only based on, you know, – like it's levels of – I'm just going back to – it's the same thing with the replicator. It's like, what's the – input level, where does the input level stop?
Well, you know? It's the same with the Geordi and Leah Brahms, right? He asked the computer to make that woman and he said, give her the personality of her personal logs.
Yes.
And she came out different than what she actually was.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's not something they touch on a lot, but it's one of those things that I can't stop thinking of because dealing with more advanced computers and stuff now, I think we all realize that obviously, yes, you can get to a point where things feel human, but there's a line where it's like even if you have a computer that can beat you in chess, that computer doesn't know how to make a sandwich unless you tell it how to make a sandwich.
Right.
If that makes sense. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's just the sort of thing that always buzzes in my mind in holodeck episodes.
They're tough to get around.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, I totally get it. I try not to get hung up too much on the particulars, because it's like nothing about the holodeck makes any sense. Like, what is everything made out of?
Right.
Like, why, I was
where
watching.
Does it go?
I was watching the new Jungle Book last night, which is pretty awesome. And I was watching a behind the scenes thing after it, and the most amazing part about it was they were showing how they could basically live render CGI environments now.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be watching the kid walking around this like track thing that has bumps in it to feel like terrain that just goes in a circle.
Yeah.
But the monitor that you're walking, they're actually like putting in a very rudimentary render of what the final animation is going to look like, so you can see how everything works, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But they're not doing anything. So that's what I was thinking about for the, like, as far as the holodeck is, like, well, this is really kind of like a holodeck kind of thing.
In terms of like how it's actively being drawn around you, sort of like it's actively reacting to and stuff.
Yeah, but then I was thinking, like, well, the difference here is like they are creating when you have to change terrains or surfaces, they are actively doing that. Like they are changing the terrain you're walking on. So how do they do that in the hall? The science isn't one-to-one, obviously.
I mean, I think that the only interesting holodeck stuff, the most interesting was the Moriarty aspect of it, you know, because it's like at what point, and it's kind of similar to, it's what all of these AI things, it's what Westworld is saying, it's what Ex Machina is saying. It's like, at what point is this not a creature that you have to respect?
Yeah.
Like, Ex Machina and Westworld kind of go at it differently. I suppose Westworld is about people can pay to sort of abuse these creations. Mm-hmm. And Ex Machina was kind of about people becoming smitten by them.
It's Westworld covers that
covers
a bit
that
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with the thing with Westworld, that's interesting. And it's, I mean, saying this isn't going to ruin anything for you. Not that you care for some.
No, I don't care about spoilers. I'm special.
Is that like Westworld? Westworld is almost like a sequel to Ex Machina, where Ex Machina creates this artificial intelligence that is completely, or pretty much borderline sentient and independent. And it's like the natural progression of that technology gets created, and then someone says, "Oh, great! How can we make money out of this?" And so they put that creation into Westworld, where the idea is that you're supposed to go there and be able to experience a Western thing, an adventure, etc., etc.
Right.
But everybody knows you're just going there to kill and fuck stuff,
right?
You know, it's the idea is not to make that the only option, but that's the thing, because of it's a cynical viewpoint of how people are, if not an accurate one.
Well, because
that's what people are going
to
do.
Right. It's the only way you can get away with those things. It's not like I'm going to go to this Westworld and do like a banking, like go to the bank and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like I'm going to do the stuff that I couldn't do.
You're going to want to go to Westworld to live as a farmer for six months. Yeah, it's not what you're going to do.
Right.
You're going to go there to be a good guy. You're going to go there to be a bad guy.
And that's been our argument against the holodeck, kind of. Like, that's why Barclay's reaction to the holodeck is actually the most realistic out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's you're going to do fucked up things in the holodeck if no one can see you or see what you're
absolutely.
Doing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That goes without saying, I think.
And,
I mean, I was thinking about this too while I was watching this episode. It's interesting to me, excuse me, especially given the era at which it was created, that maybe it was just before if TNG had started maybe 5 years later. Would they start in 87?
Yes.
If they had started 5 years later, I think the holodeck would have been like a VR program where they wear helmets and shit.
Yes, probably.
Like, the fact that they actually are physically walking in a space is really interesting to me, because I think that's – I mean, what they're doing feels like the Matrix, right?
Right, yes.
It feels like you're getting plugged into the Matrix. So,
and Matrix gets around the spatial constraints because it's all in
exactly.
your mind. Yeah,
exactly. That's, yeah, so – they take out some of the implausibility of the holodeck if you do it as like a virtual reality program.
Right. Yep.
Which I'm glad that they don't, because I find it much more interesting that it's not.
Yeah, it would be. It's a little bit more difficult to. Every time someone gets trapped in the holodeck, it would be very hard to explain why someone can't just pull the headset off.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dr. Crusher is indisposed, I guess. I feel bad because we're wrapping up the episodes. I don't have a lot else to say about Emergence, really.
I have one thing I would like to point out.
Sure.
Why is it that, I mean, it's probably for copyright reasons, but why is it that any time that they do a play, it's always Shakespeare? Why is there never, like, Data and Picard doing a scene from Glengarry Glen Ross or something?
There is a little – I mean, I know that you're – I know you're kind of joking. They actually did – the first time they did a Sherlock Holmes thing, mm-hmm. the estate of Sherlock Holmes sued them.
Ooh, really?
So they became very hesitant to do that. They eventually let them do it after a couple of years, but there is some hesitancy on their part.
I always assumed that it was the same – yeah, the same reason that they only use classical music if they use real music is because it's not copyrighted.
Right. Yep. Yep. No, it's – that's
– I'm sorry. Classical music or New Orleans jazz if Riker's involved.
It's always Shakespeare or a quasi-made-up Beverly Crusher play.
Yes. Yeah.
So
– oh, man. So you know how they have those books The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer from Twin Peaks and stuff like that.
Yep.
That it's like a fictional book based off something from a show. It would be amazing if somebody had done the theatrical works of Beverly Crusher.
The screenplays for the stage amazing. Plays. It's Frame of Mind. There's the other one. There's the Spot one. I can't. Oh my God. There's so many.
It would be great. It's for the only, like eight people.
The only art that survived into the 24th century, Shakespeare and Beverly Crusher. And Riker had that weird virtual reality thing in the early season where he watched women in a hologram dance around.
Yeah, obviously that's what you're going to do. I mean, it goes without saying. I did really appreciate Data's attention to satanic detail.
Yep.
In that opening scene. I really like that he focused on getting the details of the satanic mass correct.
I actually thought of we're rewatching The Wire right now.
Oh, nice.
So the train scene reminded me strongly of The Wire, of all the scenes where McNulty and Bunk are standing on the train tracks for some reason. Weird thing. I don't know. I think we're going to wrap this one up, though.
Yeah, I think that's about everything for me.
Yeah, it's we've said it all. In this episode, and people have said it before, there's not much else we can do with the holodeck at this point.
But I never got to say it, Wes.
I know.
That's the point.
We'll edit it in pieces into the previous episodes. Guys, we're going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back and give our final thoughts and ratings for Emergence.
You don't belong on this train.
Three tickets for Vertiform City.
Well, guess I was wrong about you folks. Welcome aboard.
What was that?
We've been having some problems. The engine is running out of steam. I hope we make it to Vertiform City on time.
Is there anything we can do to help?
Well, I could use a pair of strong arms in the engine room. Might help us get back on schedule.
Why don't you go with him, Worf? We'll see what we can do here.
All right, Clay. Give me your rating on a scale of 1 to 5. And before we do that, I want to mention we're doing the giveaway. I mentioned it early in the episode. We're giving away the TNG seasons 1 to 7 on Blu-ray. We're giving away the movies, all 10 of them on Blu-ray. You guys can enter by emailing thepenskyfilevideo@gmail.com. Put something like TNG giveaway in the subject line. Patrons get raffle tickets. It's going to be a whole raffle system. I explained it much better at the start. I just wanted to remind you guys now. Send your emails. Apply all that stuff. Clay, what'd you think of Emergence?
That's all they got to do is just email?
They have to just email, yeah.
That's a pretty awesome giveaway for just an email.
There's nothing else I can really do. I
know.
There's
what can you do like under the umbrella of the law?
Every time a podcast comes out and it's like, tell a friend.
Yeah.
Like I've never just brought up a rant. Like unless the conversation we're talking about podcasts, I've never
like
been
you're
like,
a
hey, hey, Joe,
door to door like a Jehovah's Witness or something.
Joe, you should really check out this podcast I've been listening to. It's about Star Trek. Like, are you fucking kidding me? No one's going to do that. Anyway, but yeah, just email me and you guys get these DVDs because, you know, Netflix is just going to take them off, right, Clay? They're just going to go away eventually.
Oh, eventually, because Netflix is a garbage dump.
Yes, and it's all going to go to CBS All Access and no one's going to pay for it.
I'll be honest with you. The other thing I would like to see is if we're being realistic about how people approach technology and interact with it, there should be an episode where someone, at least if I had to pick a character, I would probably say it would be Picard. Picard hates science. Why is there no scene where Picard talks about how much he hates the holodeck?
Yeah.
Is there?
No, I don't think there is.
There should be someone who's like, the holodeck has like four programs. It sucks. It's only Shakespeare or the 30s or like some weird train shit that I'm not interested in. Or dressing up like a musketeer to save somebody.
Yeah, and Deep Space Nine gets into baseball. People play baseball on the holodeck too, which is
I would go to the holodeck to watch baseball. Well, I mean, I would play it too, but I mean, wouldn't you go to the holodeck to be like a computer, load game 7 of the World Series where the Cubs win or something
like that? Yeah, exactly. Game 4 of the NA 2004.
That's another thing I was thinking of. So what is the – and obviously I don't think there's any answer for this, but just holodeck stuff to think about. What happens if you deviate from the program? So for instance, say you pull up game 7 of the NBA Finals where the Celtics lost to the Lakers.
Sure. Right?
What happens if you get into the game and you then win the game?
Right, like, shoot Magic Johnson or something like
you. Yeah, is it like in when you're playing the computer in the video game where it's like they're gonna let you score for a little bit, but then Magic Johnson is gonna drown.
Oh, right,
down 14 three pointers in like 48 seconds or something like that.
Madden rules on All Star or All Pro. It's just gonna someone's just gonna start throwing 50-yard touchdown passes at some point.
Yeah,
and just
like
get things back.
What's the level of improv involved if you're dealing with stuff? So you should probably even if you don't cover Enterprise, which you probably won't. you should probably cover the finale of Enterprise.
I should, yeah.
Because it's a TNG holodeck episode.
Yep.
That has a lot of these questions. I just watched it recently, and I was thinking about this at the time, where it's like, wow, Riker is actually interacting with people from history, giving them advice on stuff that they then have to do in history.
Right.
How does this work?
What are the limits?
No. Anyway, my answer is a 3.
It would be interesting.
I give the holodeck a 5, but as a concept. But this episode, I give a 3, I think.
I don't know if it fits into the timeline of Star Trek, but I hope Discovery does a holodeck episode.
There's got to be like a beta testing holodeck. Or
right.
Like
so there's got to be the
Doesn't,
early version.
You know, I feel like I had – well, so if any of you follow me on Twitter, you know that my favorite thing to fall asleep to is Star Trek the Motion Picture if I can't fall asleep because it always works. But I've been listening
because it's so long that you can wake up at 6 a.m. and the movie will
still be going.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. It's like the first 20 minutes of that movie is like really nice music and a window screensaver. It's a perfect storm for making you fall asleep. But I had been listening to the Mission Log episode about Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Hmm.
And I think that they mention that there is some sort of proto-holodeck thing that was either is in the movie or had been discussed to be in the movie.
Gotcha.
I haven't watched it to confirm if this is the case, but I think there is something that's supposed to be a proto holodeck in there. Obviously, you guys can scream at me on YouTube or whatever.
What if it's wrong? I mean,
someone tell me if that's the case.
I feel like the encounter at Farpoint, they brought it up as though it was a brand new technology when they introduce it. Picard is like amazed by it. Although, that doesn't mean you can retcon it into previous things. I don't know if there's a hard answer for that, which is hopefully
again,
not.
I was listening to their coverage while I was falling asleep, so I probably misheard things. But but yeah, it would be interesting if they did some sort of like, proto holodeck that, again, like an early video game machine where it only has like three things that it does.
Right. Yep. No, that's the absolute direction.
What if you have a holodeck version where it's like a lot of things that we take for granted now started as like NASA shit,
mm-hmm.
where it's it's a holodeck that's built specifically for military function, but they figure out that it can do other stuff. Like, so they build it like Silly Putty.
Right. You know,
Silly Putty was created for World War II by accident or
something. Right. Yeah, they find some other, like Velcro, I think, and stuff like
that.
Yeah.
So, like, they create the holodeck specifically to run, like, mission – what's the word I'm looking for? Simulations.
Yep.
But then they find out that they can do something else. Well, that'd be pretty
cool. They find out they can fuck the simulation.
Yeah.
That's the entire season right there. I just wrote it.
So we're running this mission, and it works fine. It's really, really, really accurate. But did you know that you can make everybody giant boobs?
Did you see the tits on the colonel who was telling me about this mission? Oh, my God.
He did not have tits like that in real life.
I'm also going to give this one a 3. Perfectly average episode, right? It's kind of our Star Trek TNG late season thing. It's like a good idea that just doesn't go anywhere.
This would be one if I was going down the list, I wouldn't say it's a definite, but I would say, yeah, you should probably give this one a watch.
Sure. Yeah. It's if you've run out of the good ones, this is the next tier, I think.
And although, you know, to be fair, I don't know. Like since we're at the end, where would you rank this if you had to go down the list of all the holodeck episodes? Would you recommend this one over, I don't know how many they are, say like maybe 10?
Yeah.
Would you put this one in the top 5?
Definitely top 5.
Yeah.
Possibly top 3. Mm-hmm. I think the only better ones would be the Barclay one.
Yeah.
And the Ship in a Bottle Moriarty episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are probably the 2, and this might be the 3rd. So, I mean, that's fairly good for how many there are. There must be – there probably are 10 of them all told.
Do you like this one better than what's the one where Picard goes to the 30s?
The Big Goodbye.
Yeah. Do you like this one better?
This is much better than the Big Goodbye.
Does the holodeck go crazy in that one?
Yes. They get locked in and the safeties get turned off and the guy gets shot. The doctor gets shot.
Okay, maybe I covered that one.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah.
Oh, damn it!
It's that's the one with Sean was on. It was Nails and Data was from South America.
Yeah, well, I'm still gonna. I don't think it quite went as crazy as it does.
Oh,
here.
I'm still gonna
say that this is my first holodeck goes crazy episode.
That might be Manhunt as well. That's the Luxana Troy. I'm getting all confused now because there's so many of the episodes. But I think you might be right. Yeah,
we should run a holodeck program to go back and figure this out.
Just go back and watch us re-record the podcast, and play baseball in the background. All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the content today.
Oh, sorry. One more thing.
Sure.
I was hoping, I don't know if they've ever done this, but I was kind of thinking it would be awesome if the holodeck started bleeding into the rest of the ship. So, like, the ship is becoming sentient and everything is, like, the core of the cortex of the brain or whatever is the holodeck. So as it becomes more sentient, the holodeck starts to – this is a completely different episode, but this would be kind of fun.
Sure.
If the holodeck starts to bleed into the rest of the ship, so it starts turning the rest of the ship into holodeck scenarios.
Right.
So basically you'd go off the bridge and take your tube thing. What are they called?
The
elevator.
The turbo lift.
Yes, turbo lift. You take the turbo lift down to engineering and you open it up and it's like a jungle or some shit. You know, like something like that. I thought it'd be kind of fun.
That's very much what Masks was.
So, oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll have to read the Wikipedia article on that episode.
Yeah, just do that and you'll think it's amazing and don't watch
it. No, it's a great idea.
Don't watch the actual episode. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We're almost done with TNG. I'm getting like bittersweet sadness here, but
I'm sorry I didn't know that, everyone. There's a lot of episodes of this show, okay? I can't watch all of them. I got Batman to watch.
Delete that angry email. If you're on YouTube, like in the comments, appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, rating review, rate us on all the podcatchers. Go to facebook.com/thepenskypodcast and go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast. Support the show. You hear episodes about stuff. Clay just did the Highlander series. We did not the series, but the 2 movies.
We talked more about Highlander 2 than I think anybody has ever talked about that movie, including the people who made it.
Well, they were very high and very concerned with the bottom, how far into the red they were going.
Argentina, man. Never make a movie in Argentina.
I've also just recorded with Trek about the we go through Star Trek 101, which was a book we recorded and talked about the 10 essential episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, how we thought that their list was shit and how we would change it. But go to patreon.com to get access to that. That'll go up after these episodes are all done.
What's your what's the next Patreon you're looking at?
People wanted the Westworld movie.
Cool.
We have to do our RoboCop thing.
Are you definitely going to do that?
The RoboCop?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do RoboCop.
You count me in on that one.
And whatever anyone else wants, just throw shit at me. Let me know what people want to hear us talk about, because they're good discussions, in my opinion. It's nice to break away from the sort of Star Trek stuff, especially when we got to season 7 and we're in this kind of lull.
We should just honestly... If we want to just go through all the movies that I have at my house, that would be awesome. Because one thing that I got from talking about Highlander 2 at length is that when we were done, I still haven't decided if I'm going to do this, but I think I tweeted this at you. I was like, I kind of feel like I can throw this movie away. I don't think I'm ever going to watch this ever again. And if I do, I can probably find it streaming somewhere. There's no reason I need to own this movie.
Right. So it's kind of a spring cleaning. We can just go through and have a podcast where you and I walk around my attic opening boxes and being like, oh, here's this children's book my mother gave to me and I'm never going to read again, and we'll throw this away.
Or like, just, we could do a show called Does This Movie Suck? And it's, we just go down all the movies that we own and we'd be like, you know what? I'm not even sure why I own this. I think I can throw this one out. This isn't a very good movie.
I think I've realized I don't actually like movies. This is enjoyable. It frees up a whole 2 hours a day.
Why do I have seasons 1, 3, and 5? Of Friends.
Those are the best seasons, quite clearly. Friends went downhill when they switched departments. That's my only opinion on that show. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, excellent 2 episodes we've just done. You'll be back for all good things, I think.
I cannot wait. I'll let you all in on a secret that you probably already know the answer to. I only agreed to do this show way back in season 1 because I wanted to talk about All Good Things, I think is...
You seriously love it.
I think it's probably the best series finale for any show I've ever seen.
It's a very good one.
At least that's what the Wikipedia page tells me.
When Picard breaks Riker's back over his knee, it's really fucking...
I really hope people listen to the last episode, otherwise these jokes aren't going to make any sense.
Guys, check out Bloodlines, check out Emergence, check out the Patreon, check out Facebook, check out all that stuff. We're going to be back. Me and Trekabout are back for Preemptive Strike, which is the penultimate episode of this. And then we're all going to be back for All Good Things, because all good things must come to an end. Clay?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what your plan is for that, as far as getting everybody involved.
We'll see. We'll see how this goes. Hopefully people read their emails. So we will check it out. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. And I really appreciate getting to do this over the past couple seasons. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been bizarre, right? You'll be involved in this sort of Q&A wrap-up, I think. So we'll have a lot of questions about that and everything. We can all give our sort of opinions about how it all went.
Does it require me having any recognition of any of the other episodes? Because
I'll give you what Richard calls it, the Friends description, where someone just goes, it's the one where...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We can do all that. Anyway.
I could probably ballpark that.
Guys, thanks again. See you later.